Chrysler's majority ownership exported from Detroit.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Giotakis. We've got the global perspective for you now. What's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? Looks like the company that's made its slogan imported from Detroit, Chrysler, will soon officially be controlled from across the Atlantic again. President Obama heads to Ohio today to announce Uncle Sam is closer to getting out of the car business. And Italy's Fiat says it wants to create a unified global footprint. Marketplace's Gregory Warner reports we've heard that phrase before.
The last time a European company took over Chrysler in the name of creating a global footprint, it didn't go so well. The year was 1998. Germany's Daimler-Benz and Chrysler never got along.
They didn't really get on at an operating level. The Americans, I think, felt they were being taken over by the Germans, and the Germans didn't really trust the American engineering.
Ian Henry is director of auto analysis in London. He says Fiat has approached the merger with a much more cooperative relationship, and Chrysler has changed. Its owner, the U.S. government, is looking forward to making some money back for taxpayers.
There's a limited number of taxpayers' dollars that's available, so this was the only or the best game in town.
The White House acknowledged yesterday that the government will not be making money on the auto bailout, as previously hoped. Around $14 billion of the bailout fund won't be paid back. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
When the OPEC cartel meets next week, it could agree to pump more oil. That would lower prices and maybe help a struggling global economy. But the oil group won't be meeting under normal circumstances. They'll be dealing with civil unrest in many member states and introducing themselves to a new oil minister from Libya. The previous minister defected this week. BBC reporter Wira Davis joins us now from Tripoli. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
The oil minister is just the latest defection amid the bombing campaign. Is the government's oversight and management of the economy still functioning there?
Only just. I mean, the loss of the oil minister is a huge blow to the Libyan regime. He was well respected in Western circles, and the Libyan regime will find it very difficult to replace him. And of course, there are no oil exports as we speak, not just on the government side, but also on the rebel side. So both sides in this conflict have been losing money hand over fist.
You say no oil is moving. Libya must be dependent on oil exports. Is the country collecting any money from that at all?
Hardly any. The problem is that the oil fields are in the south of the country where there's a lot of fighting going on. And neither side really is able to exercise control over those oil fields and get production back online. So the rebels aren't able to buy any weapons, aren't able to get money, you know, to pay salaries in rebel-held areas. And here in the government sector, equally, the economy is ground to a halt. The lack of exports is really biting the economy on both fronts.
And no end in sight to this chaos over the Libyan oil reserves?
No, we're into the fourth month of this conflict, and it's very difficult to see how Gaddafi can last out. But equally, it could take several months before I think we see the back of him, and therefore several months before oil exports will resume.
The BBC's Wira Davis in Tripoli. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
A mixed bag on world markets this morning. European stocks are down small fractions, while shares in Shanghai closed higher by almost 1%.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at chevyvolt.com. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Farmers Insurance. Trained local agents committed to small business success. More at 1-866-200-4BIZ.
The business of selling medical marijuana hit a big setback in Arizona this week. June 1st was supposed to be the day that would-be dispensary owners could start submitting applications to the state. But that date came and went without a single application being processed. As KJZZ's Peter O'Dowd reports from Phoenix, it's not for lack of interest.
Perhaps it's fitting that Bob Marley ushers in this week's grand opening of WeGrow. It's a supply superstore that owners describe as the Walmart of weed. The shelves are full of fertilizer and hydroponic gear. WeGrow is not a dispensary, but it does cater to medical marijuana growers. And right now in Arizona, that clientele includes about 4,000 patients who can legally use the drug. The only way they'll get it is by growing the weed themselves. That's because a lawsuit between Arizona and the federal government has put dispensary applications on hold.
It's going to be an uphill battle for a while.
Dar Mann is the founder of WeGrow. He says the state's lawsuit is an 11th-hour surprise. Investors who hope to open a dispensary have been prepping since November, ever since voters approved medical marijuana. Still, Mann hopes the lawsuit will eventually get the industry moving.
If the intentions are genuine to provide more clarity in order to protect state employees and protect dispensary owners, then I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing.
All this drama began last month with a letter from the U.S. attorney in Arizona. It reminded the state's health department that selling marijuana in the United States is illegal, and anyone who does it could face jail time.
That's a pretty scary business model.
Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn is worried, not only for the state employees who would stamp the applications, but also for the 120 or so entrepreneurs who would eventually distribute the pot.
So if they go into business thinking it's legal under state law and the federal government comes in and arrests them and starts prosecuting them and they're facing prison, I think that's a terrible situation.
But the situation is already uncomfortable for Brooks Elliott. He's a prospective dispensary owner who needed $150,000 in cash before the state would even consider his application.
It's a nerve-wracking thing. You know, how can you walk away from spending X amount of dollars and just shake your head and say that's the way it has to be? You know, it's serious money.
Business leaders predict the state's medical marijuana industry could be worth more than $2 billion a year. In Phoenix, I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
And finally this morning, we started with Chrysler and the president's trip to an Ohio auto plant today to talk about the U.S. selling its stake. Well, let's end with Mazda. A newspaper in Tokyo is reporting the Japanese carmaker is planning to end its joint venture with Ford and stop building cars in the U.S. Now, you might think that would mean you'll be getting your Mazda, if you buy one in the future, from Japan. Not necessarily. How about a Mexican-made Mazda? Uh-huh. The wonders of globalization. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Can you imagine a future where the interest payment alone on our national debt is $300 billion? Albert Brooks can.
The future is not going to be all good or all bad. Even in a disaster, there's good that comes out of it. And even in a beautiful wedding, three people are sick throwing up in the hall.
I'm Tess Vigeland. He's got a whole lot more of that. 2030, the novel. Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.